year period. And so my dad went to the store when I was 4 years old, and he to get cigarettes, and he never came home, never saw him again. And my mother had three small children. We lived in the projects in Cleveland. And in those days, you didn't know what to do. You remarried. But unfortunately, she married this very abusive, mentally and physically abusive alcoholic, and I hated him. But when I was about 10 years old, my mother finally got a job. My stepdad was a bartender. She was a night clerk. And we lived in these projects. And in the summer in Cleveland, they had the Good Humor Man that would come around. Every summer, every night, the Good Humor Man would come. And I was always so disappointed because all the kids would run up to the ice cream truck and we couldn't because we didn't have any money. So, it was there night after night after night. And about 10 years old, I remember hearing the bell from way in a distance. And I thought, it's the ice cream man. It's a Good Humor Man. I want ice cream. I want ice cream. And you know what? I'm going to get ice cream tonight. I don't know how, but I'm going to get ice cream tonight. So I started running through the house. And I'm looking in the couches, looking in pockets. And then I had this idea. Oh my gosh, my stepdad's a bartender. He has this little cup in his drawer in their bedroom. And I'm going to go get me some money. The problem being is my stepdad would tape the door every day before he would leave. And if you went in that door, you got beat. And I don't mean spanked, I mean beat. And I remember distinctly going, I don't care. I don't care. I want ice cream tonight. I'm going to get that ice cream. I'm going to get it. So I run outside and I can hear the truck getting further and further away. And I'm running up there and I open the door, tape and all, went in the drawer, got a dime. That's how long ago it was. And I run back and I'm chasing this ice cream man. And I'm going, wait for me, wait for me, please, wait for me. And I'm screaming and screaming, wait for me. And finally, I get to the truck and it stopped. And I said, I want a Mr. Good Bar. And he pulls out a Mr. Good Bar and he gives it to me. I give him the dime. I take off the paper. Just before I put it in my mouth, a bird flies over and poops on it. Oh, true story. That was the next 25 years of my life. True story. It was like, oh, I know. But why it's so much like my life is what I saw when I was looking back was I was always running after something. I always wanted something out there. I didn't want what I, when I was there, I wanted to be here. When I was here, I wanted to be there. When I was married, I didn't want to be married. When I wasn't married, I wanted to be married. When I was working, I didn't want to work. It was that constant, never, I was always chasing something. But then it became, not only was I chasing something, but I was running away from something. My whole life until I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have no idea what I was running to or running from. I was a good student. I loved school. I spent all my time at school so I wouldn't have to go home. And I hated my stepdad. I hated him desperately. And I hated my mother for staying married to him for 15 years. And that was kind of what we went through in our childhood, my older sister and my younger brother. But also in my childhood, I don't know why. I had nothing to do with it. I was born an optimist. From a very young girl, I just always knew it was always going to be okay. My mother was a manic depressive. She was not an alcoholic like my stepdad. And I would always say, Mom, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay, Mom. She'd go, No, you're going to see the world is going to beat you down. Men are going to abuse you. The world is going to abuse you. And I would say, No, it is. It's going to be okay. And I believed it. I don't know why I believed it, but I just knew it was going to be okay. The other thing that I had as a child, we never went to church. We never talked about God. Not that I remember ever, but I always knew there was something greater than myself. I don't know how I knew. I just knew. And when the violence got too bad in our home, I would go outside and I would lay down in the grass or sit on the sidewalk and I would look up at the sky and I would talk at something I didn't have to name, I didn't have to describe, and I would get this great peace. And it was as if there was something up there that could hear me, but I didn't know what it was, but it gave me great peace. And I had that until about 5 years before I got sober. And I started running. Just in high school, I was running, running, running. Got on a treadmill at 12 years old, turned it on high, and I was chasing something. And like I said, I was a good student. I was 12th in my class. I took everything I possibly could so I didn't have to go home. I loved it. But all my friends, they were talking about college and what they wanted to be when they grew up. I didn't know that. I started working at 13 years old. And I thought, well, that's what I'm going to do. I had no talk about college. We never talked about school. We just worked. And so that's what I was going to do. I had no goals. I didn't know what I was going to be. The only thing I knew for sure was I just got to get out of this house. I can't be at this house anymore. And I remember thinking that on the bleachers of the school on senior, I was a senior and it was raining outside and everybody was in the gymnasium and they were dancing and playing basketball. And I was looking down at it and thought, I wonder what my life's going to be. I wonder what life's going to be. I have no idea what it's going to be. Now, I didn't say, gee, I think I'll be an alcoholic woman. I'll abandon my children. I will turn out to be a woman I never would want to be. I never said that. I was always like, I wonder what it was going to be. All I wanted to do is get out of the house. And so at 19 years old, my sister introduced me to a man. He was 25 years old. He was a full-blown alcoholic. I did not know that at the time. But he asked me out on a date. My first date was to go to a bar. I was 19, he was 25. And you know, in my story, I talk a lot about everyone in this room, everyone out there is going to have things happen to you in your life that in a split second, you will be changed forever. The person you were before this happens will be totally different than after it happens. And that happened to me a lot. And when I was 19, that happened to me right off the bat. And what that was we went to a bar to go see his ex-girlfriend, the belly dancer, dance. And I should have known it wasn't going to work out real well. And but I think I'm going to a bar. This sounds exciting. Drove in his Corvette that he paid cash for when he graduated from high school. So I was impressed. He was kind of creepy, but he had a Corvette. So we went to this bar and we walked into the bar, and in a split second, it was changed forever. Because I loved it. I loved everything about it. All I had to do was walk through the door. I loved the music. I loved the laughter. I loved the dancing. I loved the smoke. It was just, it's like, I want to be here for the rest of my life. I love it. It was like I was instantly addicted to the bars, instantly. And then he handed me a drink. And in a split second, Jackie, as I knew, it was never going to be the same. I didn't know what I might have been, could have been, should have been, was gone forever. Because I took that drink and I loved it. I loved everything about it. I loved how it burned my throat and burned my lips and went down and warmed my stomach. I loved how happy I got. I loved everything it did. I mean, just the feeling that I would get, what it did for me. And what it did for me was help me pretend that all this other stuff was not going to happen. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's always going to be okay. I could forget about it, and it became my longest companion. It was my friend for many years. It was there when I was afraid. It was there when I needed to go to sleep. It was there when I needed to have sex. It was there. It was just always there. It was my longest companion at the time. I loved it, and it changed me forever. I ended up marrying that man, and he was a drinker. I was a drinker. He'd go to his bars. I would go to my bars. And I always say this, it's very sad because he's the father of my children. But he was really creepy. He really was creepy. I'm sorry. I can't help it. Truth is truth. It's an honest program. Anyways, he would go to his dive bars, and he would sit in these dive bars, and he would sit there. And when I would go in with him, I would watch him, and he'd turn his glass, and he would just watch it. Oh, man, I got to go to my disco. So I would go to the discos, and I would dance and have fun and laugh. And you know, both of us were drinkers, and we drank all night, and we did what people in bars do. And my problem was what I call today my life energy beyond my understanding was always there, even when I was a little girl that I was talking to in the sky. I knew what I was doing was not right. I just didn't feel right. And you know, I would come home at night and I'd be drunk, and I would wake up the next morning and go, oh, why did I do that? Oh my gosh. And I would get this ache, but not enough to stop me. I drank to get rid of the thoughts. And so I was like this gerbil on a wheel. You know, I would do the same thing. I'd get up, I'd go to work, I'd go out, I'd drink, I'd go to sleep, I'd wake up, I'd feel guilty, I'd go to work, I'd drink to forget. And it was this day after day after day. And after 3 years, I thought, I can't do this anymore. This pain in my heart. I saw my first psychiatrist at 19 years old just because of my family and things that happened to me as a little girl. You know, so that's all I knew how to do. I knew how to drink. I knew how to run. I knew how to go to psychiatrists, and I knew how to work. I was always successful at work, always had a good job, even in my alcoholism. And so I thought, I can't do this anymore. I just can't stand the pain of what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing wrong. I got to do something different. I go, I know I'll have a baby. If I have a baby, I know I'll be different. That'll change me. I'll have this baby to love and to take care of. And so I had my son in 1973. It was 23 years old, and I don't know how old I am. And I was holding him in my arms in that hospital and looking at him, and I loved him so much. And I said, I vow to you right now, I vow to you, I swear to you, you will never come from a home like I came from. And I meant every word of it. I wasn't lying. You will not come from a home like I was from. And the problem with that was the alcohol already had its grip on me. And my husband was out doing his thing. And I started getting that attitude. Yeah, no, you don't. You're not going to leave me here while you're out drinking. I had that attitude. I always say, like the teenage girls, they could put their necks sideways now. I don't know how to do it. Oh, no, you don't. I just can't do it. I practice it. But anyway. And so, I would go out. 6 months after my son was born, I'm out in the bars again, and he's with a babysitter. And the same thing, the same pattern over and over and over again. And then I started working. And I said, this isn't working. I got to do something different. And so what I did was, I know I'll have another baby. If I have two babies, then I'll be okay. It's alarming. It is so disturbing, the distorted thinking that we have, that alcohol does. It sounds like, I don't know how many times I said it sounded like a good thing at the time. I must have said that 100 times in my life. It never was the best thing to do, but I thought at that moment it was the best thing to do. I'll have another baby and I will change. Now I had my daughter and nothing changed. In the 70s, I read every self-help book there was to read. Even as a little girl, I read things. I was always searching. I was going to church. I love church. I love God. I love the community, everything about it. I love, but the more I did it, the guiltier I felt. I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. I thought I did really well at work. I thought I was a good mother. I wasn't. I wasn't there emotionally, and half the time I wasn't there physically. And so I ended up divorcing that man, and here I have two kids. I'm long. Well, when I was a kid, there was another thing that was real prominent in my life, the fear of being alone. It was so overpowering, the fear of being alone. Now I had two kids, but for some reason, I thought I was alone. So here I am. I have two children. I don't know what to do. So I would go to work, leave the kids with the babysitter, go to the bar, do the same thing over and over and over and over again. And that guilt, that shame, that whatever. So I started playing softball for BFW on Sunday mornings and loved it. We would have kegs of beer out there. We would do double headers. Then we'd go in the BFW and we'd drink all day Sunday, all day. And my kids would be playing on the dirty floor. And with the other kids, and they go, well, that's normal, isn't it? Isn't that what you do on Sunday afternoon? You sit there and drink all day, and your kids are on the floor. And I didn't think anything was wrong with that. I was with my kids. I was a mother. And in walked a man that was so handsome. He looked like Don Johnson from Miami Vice, the original Miami Vice. And I married the first one because I thought I could have a family and a home, and it would make me different. And when I saw him, I go, oh. I don't need the family. I need him, Don Johnson. Yeah, that'll make me happy. And so I ended up marrying Joe, was his name. And he started living with us. And I'll tell you what, he was just like the stepdad, identical. He was abusive to my kids and me. And I thought, I've done it again. What have I done? Oh my gosh. It was as at one time he choked me so hard his fingerprints were in my neck. And I thought, what am I doing? So what do? I go to work, I drink, I go to a psychiatrist. I don't know what to do. I read books. You would think I would know. I really, in the depths of my soul, believe the reason I was drinking was because of my life. It's their fault. It's not my fault. It's just phenomenal how my thinking was with all these books read, education, everything. Anyways, I divorced that man, and then my kids went to go live with their father. And here I am, I'm really alone. And so I was working at a bank during the day, and then I got a job at a disco at night as a cocktail waitress and a bartender on Saturdays. And I was working 88 hours a week for a time and drinking the whole time. I'm running, I'm on that treadmill, and I'm running fast. And I don't even know what I'm running from or running to. And I worked at my Saturday job, and in walked this man named Al. And when he came in, he told jokes, he danced, and he loved to dance, and he loved to tell jokes. I mean, Oh my God, that's what I need. I know. I mean, what woman doesn't like a man that dances and tells jokes, you know? So I started dating Al, you know, and we would go into these corner bars when I had time, or did I put the cocktail waitressing job, and we would go to bars, you know, and we would walk in and they'd go, "It's Jackie and Al. I was famous in the bars." Yeah, okay. And we would dance and we would tell jokes, and it was just so fun. And I thought, you know, I need to get my kids back. And so I got to get married. I got to get married again. And that'll work, won't it? We were going to get married. I got engaged, and he was drinking every day. I was drinking every day. And then he got hooked on cocaine. Nah. I drank every single day. I did take sleeping pills to go to sleep because I couldn't go to sleep. I did smoke a little wacky tobacco. Cocaine, I could never. I couldn't have cocaine. I'm too refined to have cocaine. My goodness. And too poor, too. But he was taking cocaine, and he became very violent also. And he was doing the same thing, throwing me down the stairs, pushing me into walls. I go, "God, what is wrong with me? I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm educated. I'm reading books. I do wonderful at my jobs. What is wrong with me? Why do I keep doing the same thing over and over?" Oh, it's called insanity, by the way. I didn't know what to do. So after a year and a half, I said, "I got to break up with this guy. He's getting too violent. I don't want my kids around him." And so he came over one day. It was Veterans Day. I had the day off because I worked for a bank, and he took the day off because he was so jealous. And he took the day off, and he came over, and he was blind drunk. And I said, "Al, I can't do this. I just can't do this anymore." He goes, "What do you mean you can't do this anymore?" I go, "I can't. I need out. I need out. You have to go." And he goes, "You're not breaking up with me." And I go, "Yes, I'm breaking up with you." He goes, "No, you're not." I go, "Yes, I am. I can't do this anymore." He goes, "No, you're not." And all of a sudden, he kind of cocks his head. And he goes, "It's over?" And I go, "Yes, it's over." And he got up, walked into my kitchen, pulled out a drawer, pulled out a knife, and stabbed himself to death.
Oh.
And the last words to me were, "I effing hate you." And in that moment, Jackie, as I knew her, was never going to be the same. I was changed forever. And you would think in that moment, I would say, "Oh my God, look what drinking has done to me." That's not what I said. I said, "Nobody hates me as much as I hate me." You know, and that light that I always had, that God that I had in my life, that positive attitude with every drink was slowly going up, slowly going up. I had just a very little left in me. When I got sober, I got my master's degree in marriage and family therapy. And it's ironic, I know. But I took a class on battered women's syndrome. And what that means is when you're beat down so badly, when you're told you're stupid, you know, man or woman, you're told you're stupid, you're dumb, you're no good, nobody's gonna like you, you can't do anything, you begin to believe it. And what it's called is learned helplessness. But I believe in that moment I had what was called learned hopelessness. And I remember distinctly saying, "My mother was right. There is no hope." And you know, when you begin to lose that hope, then the whole world is just who cares? Just who cares, you know? And I didn't have my kids again, and you know, I just it was just downhill from there. And then I was still working the Saturday bar, and in walks a different guy. His name is Dan. And Dan lived in Cleveland, but then moved to Tucson, and then moved, had a job in Cleveland and was coming back for that job. And I said, "Oh my gosh, she lives in Tucson. That's what I need. Cleveland is the second city in the United States with the least amount of sunshine. Tucson is one of the one that has the most." I go, "That's what I need, sunshine." Oh my gosh, so ludicrous, this thinking. I think if I go to Tucson, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be all right. And so I end up, and I'm going to get married to Dan, and we're going to go. My daughter went with me. My son stayed in Cleveland. And we're driving down to Tucson. I go, "My life's gonna get good. I'm gonna be okay." And I believed it. I really believed it. And I get to Tucson, and it's so beautiful. The mountains surrounding, the sun's always out. And it was wonderful for about the first 6 months. He had custody of his 13-year-old daughter. My daughter was there. And His daughter hated my daughter. My daughter hated his daughter. He hated my daughter. My daughter hated him. I hated his daughter. She hated me. And didn't work out so well. I've done it again. I've done it again. And all I know how to do is run. That's all I know. I'm a runner. And so I'm running in Driki. I'm running emotionally. And I'm running physically. And I'm just going to go through it. You know, I ended up divorcing that man. I want to get sober. You know, I had no idea what was wrong with my life. My daughter ended up finally going back to Cleveland. So I lived in this basement apartment all by myself. It was leaking. And I was drinking every day. And I didn't know what to do. And I would sit in 1993. I was sitting in my dining room and there was glass on the window, on the wall. It was the style of the 80s. And I hadn't brushed my teeth. I hadn't combed my hair. I hadn't washed my face. I had a half a gallon of vodka on my lap. And I'm looking in this mirror and I go, what happened to my life? What happened to my life? How did I get here? And I really, with that half a gallon of vodka in my life, I had no idea it was the vodka. Before my daughter left, I actually put her into three drug rehabs, starting at the age 13. And I would go to the family meetings. Now, I am, like I said, educated. I was a vice president at a bank by this time. I had to go to a class on alcoholism in the workplace. I thought those poor people. And I would go to her family meetings, and the doctor would come out and say, alcoholism is an allergy of the body and an obsession of mind. It takes away your personal life, your professional life. It takes your soul away. And I'd go, oh, my poor daughter. I had no idea. The denial was so deep. The denial of the alcoholic is what kills us, what destines us to die or institutions. I had no idea. I still thought it was my life. It was the way my childhood was. It was my mother. It was my stepdad. It was my father. It was all these men that I was with. And I thought it was that. And you would drink too if you were me. And so, you know, she had gone, and I thought in 1993, I thought, you know what? There's two things that happened that changed my life. Very subtly, I didn't realize it until a little bit later. But in 1993, I was ordered by the president of the bank to go down to Sierra Vista and get this big loan, it's a subdivision. I was in construction lending. And he said, there's a girl that works on the west side of Tucson. I want you to go pick her up. She's in mortgage. I never saw her before. I didn't know who she was. She was 23. I was 43. And I'm going to take her down there and we're going to get this loan. So we do. We get the loan. I always got the loan. And so we go out to lunch and I'm sitting there and I'm drinking my vodka martinis and she's drinking a Coke. I go, you want a drink? She goes, no, I don't drink. And I go, oh. I go, you mean you don't drink on your lunch hour? She goes, no, I don't drink. I go, oh, okay. I go, do you think I drink too much? And she goes, I don't know. I don't know you. And I go, oh. And she goes, but you know what? See, my God left a lot of breadcrumbs on the way. It's anonymous. It really did. And he said, but you know what? I have this friend. And he goes to a place called Alcoholics Anonymous. It's on Ida Road at 445, and he hasn't drank in 18 years. And I said, why? I don't know why. And I just put that in the back of my head. I didn't even think about it. Never occurred to me. It's 1993, and I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll start joining some churches. If I join some churches, I'll feel better. And so I went to Methodist Church for the music. That didn't work. I went to Lutheran Church because it was structured. That didn't work. You know, I was slowly throwing that God away. And I went to finally to a Baptist church, a Southern Baptist church, the largest one in Tucson. And I was going to get baptized. And it was Sunday and there were 700 people in the congregation. And they were going to put me in this vat and then pull me out. And I was going to be free. I was going to be better. I wasn't going to be this person anymore. I just wanted to be different. I just want to be different. And so I go in the vat and he pulls me out. And all I saw were 1,400 eyes looking at me going, who are you kidding? I couldn't wash it off. Nothing was helping me. And so I know I'll go to a psychiatrist. Now, mind you, I had been to 30 psychiatrists already. Thank you. 30 psychiatrists already, and none of them helped me. And they said, well, you have to go to a Tucson alcohol consult, take a test, you go to outpatient. And I said, well, I'll go, I'll take the test. So I went on my lunch hour and I took the test. I go, okay, I'm doing good. Look at this. Drinks less, but gets drunk faster. Wow, I'm doing well. And she comes on, she asked me, I told her I was married three times, all the stuff that happened to me, my kids. And she put down the, and I told her about my panic attacks that I was going to the hospital once a month with severe panic attacks and all that kind of little stuff. And so she puts her pencil down. She goes, I just want to let you know you're in the chronic stages of alcoholism. I said, what? No, I got a job. I got a car. She got a job and a car. I can't be an alcoholic. And she goes, yes, your liver has stopped processing the alcohol. That's why you're still drunk, even though you don't take a drink. And I go, no, that's not right. And she goes, you can go, we'll pay for it. I go, no. She goes, not going to save your life? No, I'm fine. I'm not an alcoholic. So all the way back to work, I'm going, chronic stages of alcoholism. Can't be, can't be. Anyways, I kind of forgot about that. But what I did was I said I could get my own psychiatrist. So I got a psychiatrist out of the phone book. I went to the psychiatrist and it was my 31st psychiatrist. Here comes my God again. And she says, well, I just want to let you know I'm in recovery. And I don't treat anybody that's actively drinking. Do you drink? A little. And she says, well, I don't treat any. You'll have to go to AA. I want you to go once a week for me to treat you. Now, I don't know why, but I said yes. And so, I went to a meeting. I made fun of everybody. And I went on a field trip. I told my friend, let's go on a field trip. And we went to that AA meeting. And this guy got up and spoke. And he said he used to live in a garbage can and ate out of the garbage can. 10 DUIs. And, all, I never had a DUI. I never went to jail. I don't know why. I should have. So I went back to her. I go, I'm not an alcoholic. And she says, well, try it again next week. And so I did. So for 8 months, I go, I am, no, I'm not. I am, no, I'm not. I am, no, I'm not. And then something happened in November of 1994. I came home from an appointment from her, and I walked in my basement apartment, and I just stopped. And what I realized was I had nothing in me, nothing. I was empty. I had no hope. I had no faith. I had no God. I had no self-respect. I had nothing in me. And I didn't know what to do. And I just literally fell to the floor, spread eagle. And I called out to a God I hadn't talked to in a while because I had thrown away. And I said, God, please change me. Please change me. I didn't say help me quit drinking because I still didn't know I was an alcoholic. I think in the deep recesses of my mind, I did. And so I fell asleep crying. And when I woke up the next day on the floor, I had to go to work like I always do. I get dressed up. I put on my Liz Claiborne suit. I got my briefcase. I'm driving down to the church, this Episcopalian church, and I'm it's sunny, it's beautiful. I can't stop crying. And all of a sudden, I hear, I'm never going to laugh. I'm never going to dance. I'm never going to sing. I'm never going to have sex. Not that I was dancing or singing. And on this shoulder, I heard, I just want to be different. I just want to be different. And so when I got into that meeting, I sat way in the back and I was all folded up and I was sobbing, loudly sobbing. And all of a sudden, it was this that God that I had as a little girl that I didn't have to name and I didn't have to describe, put his hand on my shoulder and said, it's time. And I went, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic. And in a split second, Jackie, as I knew, it was never going to be the same. Because in that moment, I conceded to my innermost self who and what I was. I was an alcoholic. And concede means to surrender to the truth. And I had surrendered to the truth. I believe I did steps one, two, and three, laying on that floor the night before, begging somebody, something to please change me. And in that moment, I was changed forever because all of a sudden I heard everything you heard, everything you said. I heard you never have to live that life again. I was 44 years old. I go, I don't. I didn't know that. You mean I could change my life? No, I taught it, but I couldn't see it in myself. And they said, you never have to take another drink if you don't want to. In fact, you don't have to take another drink if you do want to. And I go, I don't. I was shocked. And so I just dove into Alcoholics Anonymous both feet. I loved Alcoholics Anonymous. I loved the step. You know, that stepdad that I hated for my feet to my toe, for my toes to my head, I hated him. And when I saw him 5 years before I got sober, he was making amends to me, and I didn't know it. I was drunk, and I kept saying, "I hate you. I hate you. I'll hate you to the day I die." And he kept saying, "I understand your pain. Is there anything you can do to make it feel better?" I go, "No. I hate you. I will always hate you to the day I die." He just kept talking, and I'm drinking my vodka martinis, and he just kept saying, "Oh, 5 minutes." That's what he said. 5 minutes. Anyways, I gotta get. So anyways, you know, fast forward, I was able to make amends to that man when I kept saying I hate you, because I understood I had become him. I even went to AA meetings with him until he died. In 1997, two things that were to change my life forever. One, there was a man in my home group that he lived in California and Maui, but he also came to Tucson. And you know, I knew him for 3 years, never thought anything about him. He came back, you know, and lo and behold, we went out on a date, and 6 weeks later, we were married on the beaches of Maui. Yeah, 27 years of sobriety. And we had the most wonderful life. We went cross country 6 times, stopped at meetings at every one of them. We both had sponsees. We both had sponsor meetings in our house. I mean, we loved Alcoholics. We loved it. Our life was surrounded with God, the program, and then our relationship. It was different than anything. For the first time in my life, I had a true partnership with another human being. Thank you, God. And you know, that life energy beyond my understanding was always with me. So in 1997, we had gone cross country 6 times. Like I said, went to 4 international conventions, and in 1997, we went to the Atlanta convention, and we drove there, and then we drove up. And my sister's, we went to Cleveland, my sister's 50th wedding anniversary. It was, and we went there. We danced. My family was there. My kids were there. We had made amends. It was absolutely incredible. And all of a sudden, he was listening to the Dodgers. By the way, it's 6-0. Dodgers. Hey, he goes, "Listen, they won, they won, they won." And all of a sudden, he said, "I'm dizzy." And he fell into my arms. He had an embolism to the heart. And in a split second, I was changed forever, because I had no idea what to do. I was a newcomer all over again. When I came back to California, you know, I did not know what to do. And what I did was, I went to my morning meeting like I was supposed to do. All the smokers were lined up, and they're all smoking cigarettes, and they threw them away, and they went, "It's Jackie Babb." And they all lined up, and every one of them hugged me and sobbed with me. And then I walked into the meeting room, and every single person in that room stood up and formed a line, and every one of them hugged me. And when the last person hugged me, I had another experience that would change me forever. I had realized that everything changes. Life changes. You know, we get married, we get divorced, we get sick, we pass away, our kids get married, they go away. But the only thing that has never changed in my life was Alcoholics Anonymous. The steps don't change, the principles don't change, the concepts don't change. And if you're in the middle of the fellowship doesn't change. My life was changed forever because Alcoholics Anonymous carried me through everything. A diagnosis of cancer, it carried me through it. You know, the loss of my husband, it carried me through it, because I did everything you tell me to do. You go to meetings, you answer your phone, you do your commitments, you do, and every one of those things I did through every opportunity. I call an opportunity. It's what people would say is bad, but not bad. An opportunity to grow. Anyways, I love you. And at our wedding, we had our song. It was called "The Gift" by Colin Ray. And there's one line in it that says, "You gave your love away. I'm grateful every day. Thank you for the gift." And I thank you for the gift of my life that you have given me, because I am an abundant, blessed person because of you. Thank you.